Welcome to ET First Contact Radio on BBS Station 1. Tonight we have a very special guest. His name is Alfred Lambron Weber, and he is the founder of Exopolitics and in Seattle, and he lives in Vancouver, Canada. And I'm very glad to have you on the show, Alfred. Welcome.
Oh well, thank you. I lost the audio there for a moment, so I'm just back on air, and I'm very, very happy to be here.
Well, we are very happy to have you on the show. I'm sitting here in my studio with my friend Cibrenio, who is also very much interested in extraterrestrial life.
And, oh, excellent.
Everything that's happening, he's just there to support me.
Oh, good.
And, well, as I said, I'm very happy to have you, and I just want to, for the listeners to... tell a bit about your life history and the things that you are doing. You are a master in education and also a juridical doctor, JD, is that what it says?
Yes, it's in Latin, it's Juris Doctor. It means
right.
doctor of laws.
Interesting, yeah. And then you are the author of Exopolitics, Politics, Government and Law in the Universe.
Yes, correct.
Yes, and you are the founder of Exopolitics, and it says here the science of relations among intelligent civilizations in the multiverse. Exopolitics includes a case of study of human contact with an advanced civilization on Mars. Well, that's my first question that's coming about.
Okay.
According to mainstream science... Mars is unable to inhibit any organic life forms or carbon-based life forms as on Earth because of the climate situation. So many people will have problems to believe this, but can you share with us a little bit about your research? Because I'm playing the devil's advocate now. I believe it. I know it. It's there. But just playing devil's advocate now for you.
Well, first, I just want to take a moment that as a professional advocate, a lawyer, as you know in French, avocat is advocate, means lawyer, correct?
Right.
So my question to those who always say, I play the devil's advocate, is who is your client?
Right.
Oh, you're working for the devil.
I'm
Gee,
not.
I what think a I'm client. No, I mean, if people would take a moment and reflect on what the term devil's advocate really means, it's working on behalf of the devil, because that's who your client is. So,
well, I was saying I was playing the devil's advocate. I said I was not being.
Okay, good. I can see how you have the makings of a good lawyer. Oh, okay. Well, this is actually a paradigm shift, and it's
right.
One that is going to take a great deal of time, and we don't know exactly how much time. Maybe it'll be 10 years, maybe it'll be 20 years, maybe it'll be 5 years. And that is because one of the most deeply guarded secrets is the strategic relationship between the military intelligence controller community on Earth,
yes,
and the civilization on Mars. And one of the also most secretly held projects are the secret U.S. bases on Mars. As I understand, they're not only U.S. bases, but they may be multinational bases. And yeah.
And I think when this comes to the public, I think many people will really be shocked and even angry.
Well, that has already come to the public, and that's part of our work. And I've had adult men who consider themselves progressional rationalists who attended my lectures. For example, I gave a lecture in Montreal, and when we got to the subject of life on Mars, this gentleman stood up and started shouting and marching
out.
Yeah, because it triggers multi layers in the human psyche, not the least of which is what Barbara Hand Clow calls catastrophobia. And this brings back a great solar system catastrophe.
Yes.
Which,
because I understand from books from, now you speak about Barbara Hand Clow, the Pleiadian agenda and the consciousness shift that you were just talking about, and also authors like Patricia Corey, which I met in a crop circle in England, which you interviewed a little while ago.
Yes.
All saying the same thing, that in the history of our solar system, there have been wars.
Yeah.
And in our subconsciousness, we still have memories from this. Is this what you are implying?
Well, not necessarily wars. These could have been astronomical catastrophes. For example, we have the record of a great solar system catastrophe, which occurred about 11,500 years ago in the year 9500 BC. And that was when a fragment of the supernova Vela came into the solar system and demolished the surface ecology of the planet Mars, damaged it, and made it into an oblong planet. If you look at Mars, it's not exactly spherical. It's an oblong now.
And
it also damaged the surface ecology of the Earth, such that the great maritime civilization, which Plato called Atlantis, was destroyed. And prior to the solar system catastrophe, our evidence indicates that Earth and Mars had an interplanetary society that was ruled by a common leadership that may have been the Egyptian pharaohs.
Wow, that's so interesting.
Yeah. Now, as a matter of fact, I've engaged in many formal debates, you know, which is what lawyers love to do, using the law. I'm sorry?
That's why I do a radio show. I'm not a lawyer, but I have to debate.
Well, you have all the makings of when I can tell you that. For example, I once engaged in a dialogue. I wouldn't call it a debate, but a dialogue with another Mars researcher called Richard Hoagland.
I have heard about him. Yes.
Yeah.
He's one of us.
Yeah. Well, there's one of us, and then there's not one of us, And because in this field there are great contentions and great divisions depending on the evidence. And when I say we, there are a number of organizations, one of which is called the Mars Anomaly Research Society. And you can go to the website there. It's at projectmars.net.
Yes, and I saw that you are the founder of it.
Well, I'm the co-founder. I'm Andrew DiBisciago, who's another attorney, is the president, and I'm the chairman, and we both co-founded the organization. And there are over 60 papers there, with photographs, images, and analysis from the Mars rovers. Now, Mr. Hoagland is of a generation of researchers that researched evidence of past life on Mars based on the Viking satellite photographs. And so that these are from the geostationary orbit over Mars. And right. And we are from a newer generation of researchers, which actually researched Mars from the rovers, which take the photographs at the level of the surface of Mars. And what we are able to discover there, and we have a worldwide network of photo analysts, is number one, that there are, and these are images which are embedded in the photographs, in the large composite photographs that the Mars rovers take of the surface of Mars. NASA puts them on the internet, and then you take those and you go inside that photograph and begin to search for things. So it's kind of like being an anthropologist of outer space, kind of exoanthropology or exobiology, you know, that sort of endeavor. What we've been able to show, and again, there are over 60 papers up there, is that there are numerous species of humanoids, number one, numerous species of animals on the surface of Mars, some of which are like animals that are on Earth, some of which are very different. They're throwbacks to the dinosaur age because Mars never had a KT event like we had 65 million years ago when the dinosaurs were reportedly extincted here on Earth because of an asteroid event. We also have images of structures and of statues. Now, the structures and statues both are contemporary, and they also are predate the 11,500 years ago, the 9500 BC solar system catastrophe. So we can... So we can delineate all of that. I mean, that's how we've been able to piece together and show that prior to the solar system catastrophe of 9500 BC, Mars and Earth were probably an interplanetary society.
Yes. Well, I have always believed that before and during the time of Atlantis, we must have been a space-worthy civilization.
Yeah. If you go to projectmars.net, you'll see photographs, for example, of an Egyptian sarcophagus. The sarcophagus of the king, where the headstone where the head of the sarcophagus is carved into, there's it's a sarcophagus, and at the head is the carved head of an Egyptian pharaoh with a typical conical headpiece that you find, for example, on the statue of Queen Nefertiti. So,
yes.
Yeah, so it's very much in that Egyptian style. You could say, well, how did this artifact get to Mars? So then you have to begin to construct logical and rational arguments. And there are large public artworks, you know, large frescoes of pharaohs, queens, Egyptian queens, kind of which are public art. And this is the ancient art that predates, apparently, the solar system catastrophe of 9500 BC. And then there, of course, there are more recent structures, and these are structures which appear to be entrances to underground shelters. There appear to be different types of humanoids, and the surface of Mars appears to be very wild. It's these are filled with wild beasts.
Is it true?
Yeah, you know, they're these are very we have multiple photographs of what apparently are plesiosaurs, and these are a type of dinosaur which was wiped out in the KT event, a KT extinction on the Earth, but it's still held to be the reason for the Loch Ness Monster, or here in the close to Vancouver, we have a Lake Okanagan kind of monster.
Yes.
Which is very much like a plesiosaur. So, but the surface of where these photographs have been taken, the plesiosaur is very common. We have many animals that are along the reptilian phylum, the reptilian species. We have photographs of, and this is extraordinary, of an advanced humanoid-type being that appears to be between 20 and 25 feet tall.
I saw photographs of humanoid skeletons of 20 meters long, but that was in the desert of Iraq.
Yeah. Well, this is on Mars. These are reptilian type beings, and they have kind of a reptilian face, and they're walking along on this path, and they have a humanoid in their arms. Now, we can't tell if they've captured that humanoid and they're going to do something to them, or, you know, we don't know, or if they're a taxi of the humanoid. You know, we don't know.
From a natural disaster, maybe?
Yeah, and there appear to be some places that are just these vast fields of humanoid bodies that are just there kind of decomposing. And there are a lot of snakes going through that. And we posit that those may be outdoor cemeteries. In other words, there's a civilization which is human, which lives under the surface of Mars. And
right.
And that civilization may use the surface of Mars as its cemeteries. When someone dies, they may take the bodies out there and just put them up to the top.
The surface like it's the opposite of what we are doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And, yeah, now, so that's some of what we call in the law documentary evidence, because in the law, you, as you know, you have different two different types of evidence. One is documentary and the other is witness evidence, you know.
Right.
So that's some of the documentary evidence. Photographs are documents, and these are official government photographs. So we have that there. So far, these photographs are a world discovery. These are the first photographs of beings from another planet that we have put on display for the population of this planet. And let me tell you, it's been a very we published these at the end of December 2008. And it was a very, very difficult experience.
Right.
Number one, there were three different levels of resistance. Number one, I should say that when we go to a typical lecture and I present the photographs of the life on Mars, we'll get anywhere between 50% to 75% to 90%, depending on the animal. Generally, with the plesiosaur, I get between 90 and 95% of the people in the audience raise their hand and say, I can see the plesiosaur. And the reason is that NASA uses seven different types of filtering to mask the evidence of life on Mars, because they want to keep it a state secret.
Yes.
That there's life on Mars for many different reasons. The first reason is that the U.S. military base on Mars is the most strategic military base that the U.S. has. And it is not only a military base, but it is a strategic base of escape for the Illuminati controllers.
Right.
That is the banking controllers, the monarchs, the political and financial elite. I want to not use the word elite. I want to use the word controllers, because elite implies that you have some merit or value. And I do not believe that these people morally have merit or value, because they are holding this vital information hidden. And I believe that on consideration, that is immoral and illegal and unconstitutional. But be that as it may, what really opened up the Mars base, and this is where we've now just covered the evidence from Mars from the photographs and what's on the surface. Now, if we go beneath the surface, that's where a great deal of action is happening. And what really opened up the Mars for Earth activity was the development with DARPA, Defense Advanced Project Research Agency of the Department of Defense, and with the CIA from 1968 to 72, of Project Pegasus, in which they developed secretly using Tesla-based quantum access technologies. They developed the capacity for quantum access teleportation and time travel in the time-space hologram. It appears that we are inside a time-space hologram, which is actually, it's a technology. We live inside of a time-space hologram, which is a technology. You would call it, in other words, a virtual experience. That's what we're living here as humans in our third dimension of time-space. And
no state is multidimensional. Is that correct?
Yes, right. But it's a technology that is there are some intelligences which are creating this reality that we're in. It's a time-space hologram.
Yes, and then we get to the subject of HARP, I suppose. Is that correct?
We could, but I would rather stay with Mars and give you a complete answer.
Okay. Oh, no. This was just my speculation, but go on, Alfred. It's very interesting. And my friend is very fascinated with what you are telling.
Yeah. HARP is a large part of keeping the Mars base secret, because through HARP, they dumb down and keep the human population in a state of trance. And the HARP aerosol chemtrails system, the aerosol chemtrail system has converted the atmosphere into a plasma. And that plasma is a bioweapon against humanity, which is actually part of the depopulation program. It is genocidal and ecocidal. And all of this is happening on behalf of an extraterrestrial race that wants to cull down the population of Earth, that is in collaboration with the controllers of Earth. The pattern of that future society, which is called the New World Order, is essentially masters and slaves. We're going back to the old order of masters and slaves, which is what the pharaohs were. Eliminate all of the educated middle class. We'll have two classes, an educated master class and then a slave class. And that is what is being attempted to be done now, using instrumentalities such as HARP and chemtrails and nuclear radiation and a lot of other toxic technologies, and as well engineered natural catastrophes. But that's a separate subject.
Yes.
It's a separate subject, but not unrelated to Mars, because on Mars, according to the Alternative 3 doctrine, the Illuminati class has the Illuminati controllers that are collaborating with lower order extraterrestrials have created a base at which up to a million people can ride out whatever catastrophes are may be planned for Earth if they do occur. What do we know about what's going on under the surface of Mars? Well, what really opened up corridors between Earth and Mars and the capacity to have large-scale bases there was the development of quantum access time travel and teleportation in the early 1970s. And the U.S. Secret bases on Mars are serviced by teleportation and time travel corridors that go from U.S. teleportation bases on Earth. They can be in the U.S., they can be in Australia, they can be, you know, many different places, and that end up on Mars and back and forth. The trip takes about 20 minutes, and you go through what are called jump rooms, where this entire room is just, you're just kind of teleported there.
I think I have seen an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation where they show this kind of technology. Because, of course, Gene Roddenberry, the creator of Star Trek, was not stupid. He was getting information from all those things that were happening in the 70s. And I think he had interesting relationships with, I mean, interesting contacts to make his TV show, to expose these technologies to the public.
Now, it's important with regard to the Gene Roddenberry generation of TV. This technology opens up vortal tunnels in the time-space hologram, and you go through those vortal tunnels. It is not what was shown in Star Trek, where you're
dematerialized.
Yeah, dematerialized into your different atoms, and then you're reassembled.
Your example of the way that it happens when you have this trip to Mars, it's not dematerialization. And I was referring to an episode in Star Trek, and that was not the teleportation itself, but it was a special episode when they were on some place and you stepped kind of into a room and stepped out the door, and then you were in another reality.
Well, that's exactly what this is. It's a jump room. So he must have had inside knowledge, because that's exactly around the time that all of this began. And we know that, and people can go to either my Examiner college column. Just go to examiner.com and Google my name, and it will take you to my column, or to www.exopolitics.com. And we have interviewed multiple whistleblowers, individuals who have been to Mars, who have teleported to the secret bases on Mars.
You have those interviews online?
I'm sorry?
And you have those interviews online?
Yes. Yes.
That's very interesting. Well, I was my friend next to me, who was supporting us, he just wrote some things down on a paper for me. And first of all, he and myself, we are admiring your universal knowledge. And I think that humankind needs to wake up. We both think this. And that you are doing a great job to help us wake up. And still many people have their eyes and ears closed, but you have all of it open, and I must tell you, there's a plethora of information, and I just want to repeat the website from Mars. We were talking about Mars before. This is ET First Contact Radio, and we are interviewing Alfred Lumbermont Weber, and he is from Ectopolitics, and the information about the Mars Anomaly Research Society can be found on www.projectmars.net. And was you finished talking about the inside life on Mars, Alfred, or do you want to skip to another subject?
Well, you know, I had just started on the inside life on Mars. I can do it quickly, but I just wanted to, if you give me 5 or 10 minutes, I can give you a complete picture.
Well, go ahead. We are very interested. We are all ears.
Oh, good. Okay. Now, the listeners should go to projectmars.net. Those are for the photographs that are on the surface of Mars. That's life on Mars, indigenous Martian life on the surface of Mars. If you go to exopolitics.com and my Examiner articles at examiner.com, just go there and enter my name, and or just Google my name and put life on Mars, and it'll all come up. There is where we go to the witnesses. And these witnesses are people like Andrew D. Bishago, who I've mentioned. Mr. Bishago was a childhood participant with Project Pegasus, and has teleported both to the and time traveled both to the future and to the past. Part of his job was to go to the year 2045 and acquire information from a project in the future at 2045 and bring it back to 1971. In the past, because the future is helping the past get to the future safely. He, in the 1980s, 1981, was being groomed to be a permanent colonist on the Mars, at the secret Mars colony. And this is kind of a life choice that you make. You know, am I going to go to Mars and serve the Illuminati and serve out my destiny there? Or am I going to be here on Earth, be part of the Matrix, or am I going to be part of the Truth Movement? That's, you know, these are choices that we all have here in at this time in our history.
Yes.
Because there seems to have been what my colleague Richard Dolan calls a breakaway civilization. The banking and the royal families and the banking families and these bloodlines that have controlled what I call God, gold, oil, and drugs for many centuries in their control over humanity now seem to have broken away. And they're hiding all of the secret technologies, the Stargate technologies, to begin to move out into the universe and keeping it a secret from the human population and trying to depopulate us and bring us down to what I call a theme park planet. They want to make Earth a theme park planet for the controllers, where they'll come here and there'll be 500 million people. And they can go about, you know, on their estates and, you know, have people come up and give them trays full of entrees and, you know, wine and other delicacies. I guess that's their pictures of how life should work. So we in the Truth Movement think otherwise. You're doing a very fine job as well in terms of providing a platform for all of this information to come out. Well, Mr. Bashaga was being groomed to go to the Mars base in 1981 and teleported there once on his own and once in the company of a CIA agent who was kind of his controller at that point. His name, the name of the CIA agent was Courtney M. Hunt, related to the Hunt brothers in Texas, who tried to corner the silver market a number of years ago, and also to E. Howard Hunt, who was a CIA agent who reportedly was part of the team that assassinated John F. Kennedy. So these are very deep dramas that are going on this planet. Kennedy, of course, was opposed to these, to the Rothschild interests, to the the British crown and aristocracy, to the Federal Reserve interests that are controlled by the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers. And he was killed, he was assassinated for that by these same interests now, which are founding the Mars bases. So it's all convoluted, but we can describe it. It's not that, you know, it's not rocket science. It's
no.
It's conspiracy research. And I've been in this field since 1973. So,
that's before I was born. I was born in 77.
Wow. Well, in 1977 was the year that at Stanford Research Institute, with the approval of the Jimmy Carter White House, we got the proposed Carter White House extraterrestrial study started. And then in at the same time, concurrently, while I was doing that in 76, 77, Congressman Henry B. Gonzalez, who was chairman of the House Banking Committee at the U.S. Congress, asked me to help him get the House Select Committee on Assassinations started to investigate the assassinations of John F. Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and Malcolm X. Now, there really? Is a connection,
you
yeah.
A lawyer there, in this time already.
Oh, yeah. I graduated from Yale Law School in 1967.
Okay, yes.
I'm going to be 70 years old next year.
Really? Well, you look much younger, Alfred, on your picture.
You know, there's a way of youthing and of being timeless and ageless.
Yes, exactly.
And it's all in the mind, right?
Oh, yes, I know.
Yeah, well, yeah, so, yeah,
I was talking about what happened in 76, 77. This was interesting.
Yeah, yeah. In a certain sense, we had much more freedom back in 76 and 77 than we have now in 2011. Yeah. I mean, in 2011, a lot of the population has been dumbed down. There mm-hmm. are these deployment of advanced weapons like HARP and the Gwen Towers and the microwave weapons that keep the people completely asleep. And back in 76, 77, it was still a modicum of democracy functioning. So, mm-hmm. We were able to get a House Select Committee on Assassination started to investigate the assassinations of the two Kennedy brothers, Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, and also to get an extraterrestrial communication study started in the Carter White House. So you can imagine, and that's while I was at Stanford Research Institute. So at that time, I was like, you know, I would go to Washington and I was like surrounded by men in dark glasses and dark suits, if you understand my meaning.
Really?
And, oh yeah, and, you know, I was just like, it was something. But there's a real connection between John F. Kennedy and the extraterrestrial cover-up. Because yeah. this is what they call a deep space war. This is an incarnational war, and many of us starseeds come in and incarnate to keep the balance of light going, you know, so that darkness doesn't completely envelop our planet. Well, so some of the other witnesses that, with regard to the Mars base, are people like U.S. serviceman Michael Ralph, who was a permanent guard in security at the U.S. Mars base from 1976 to 1996. And the way they keep the Mars base hidden from Earthlings is that they hide it away in time, in the time-space continuum. In other words, they time travel teleported him to the Mars base. He served there for 20 years, and then they time travel and teleported him back. And he arrived back on Earth on the very same date that he left in 1976. And then he served out a normal deployment in the U.S. Armed Services from 1976 to 1982. These are the time paradoxes that once you get into time science and you begin to be able to manipulate it as a dimension, you're outside of the normal constraints one who approaches time as a linear dimension might think of. So this is the primary way that the Illuminati forces that have now linked up with fourth dimension lower level extraterrestrials, unethical manipulatory extraterrestrials, have us trapped in these kind of time space prisons. Like the Matrix here on Earth. So what he states is completely congruent with what Andrew Bishago states. And then there's Arthur Neumann, who's a former DOD scientist who we interviewed in Barcelona in 2009. And
I remember he followed it through from the distance. How do you call this service that you can watch video live? You can watch a conference from all over the world. The internet.
Sure.
That's
what it is. Yeah.
It was the ExoPolitics Summit in Barcelona, right?
Yeah. And you saw it through live streaming.
Yes, that's what I did, yes.
Yeah.
It was very interesting.
Yeah. So here we have, from an evidentiary standpoint, from the standpoint of the law of evidence, which the courts have used for centuries to be able to determine facts, we have independent eyewitnesses who have met members of the underground civilization on Mars and interacted with them. Mr. Bisciago, in 1970, met three Martian astronauts in the company of his father when they were at a U.S. Defense base in New Jersey in 1970 on a liaison visit to their counterparts in the U.S. defense structure, in CIA and Department of Defense. So because the U.S. and the Martian civilization have maintained a common defense perimeter against what they consider to be an possible invasion of the solar system by extraterrestrials from outside
negative ETs.
Yeah. So this is exopolitics is a complex circumstance.
Yes, it is very complex.
Yeah. You know, those who study international politics, you know, imagine how complex international politics is. If you get to the situation in the Balkans, for example, the 90s.
Dealing with exopolitics, you are also dealing with the prime directive. Is that correct?
Well, you're dealing with the prime directive as it applies to ethical civilizations. But unethical civilizations do not necessarily follow the prime directive. And
they violate the universal law.
Yeah. And then
by being unethical.
Yeah.
Alfred, I just want to ask you, with all those powers that be that control us, like the Illuminati or those negative ETs, I was just wondering, I think that persons like you and Dr. Bisciago must have a certain way of protection. And then I come to the subject, the Galactic Federation. What is your idea about it, about the Galactic Federation? Are they helping us to evolve, and are they protecting us from total destruction?
Yes, well, again, that's a very interesting subject, because what we've done in exopolitics is that we have approached the subject of galactic governance as much as possible from a scientific point of view, or from an academic and scholarly point of view, because you would posit that in many ways, if we look at the exopolitics model in the same way that we have governance bodies and governance systems here on Earth, we would have governance systems throughout the multiverse at various levels. And so our initial book, Exopolitics, addressed the issue of governance models, and there we introduced the whole concept of replicable research through remote viewing, which can be replicated, and remote viewers that had successfully established interactive communication with galactic governance authorities. Now, that has been updated, and again, you can go to exopolitics.com, and there on the right-hand menu, we have a link to all of our articles on the Galactic Governance Authorities, meaning the Galactic Federations. And we approach this from an empirical point of view. And
empirical science.
Yeah, you know, as using the scientific method. And what has occurred there is that through a variety of different witnesses, one of whom was a former NORAD officer, lifelong.
Stanley Fulham?
Yes.
Yes, he died recently, but he was so interesting, and he was in the news last year when he predicted this 13th of October flyover over Manhattan.
Yes, yes. And
he did with remote viewing as well, because the remote viewing is a scientific method to predict things that are going to happen from the future or from other places.
Right.
Major Dames is the guy who did a lot of research in remote viewing. I have a couple of DVDs from Major Ed Dames.
Does
did he tell you something?
Well, it's very. With regard to our early research into galactic governance was done through remote viewing. We do not use Major Ed Dames as a source, but we use Dr. Courtney Brown, who brings in the largest number of militarily trained remote viewers on a number of his studies. But now, with regard to so that's one quadrant by which we establish the existence of galactic governance authorities. As a matter of political science, or as a matter of exopolitical science, we establish that because we would have laboratory protocols plus replicable results. That is, you can replicate interactive communication with galactic governance authorities, and standard laboratory protocols and replicable results are what, under the scientific method, those are the two components of the scientific method that lead to knowledge that is derived from and certified by the scientific method. So we use that to establish the fact that, yes, there are governance authorities. Now, as to the question of the content of what do those governance authorities say, here we go on kind of a case-by-case basis. And the case-by-case basis, and I see that we have only about 5 minutes.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, so I'll be very quick, and people can go to the links at exopolitics.com. Just look for the link that says Galactic Governance Authorities. It's on the right-hand menu, and I'll take you to about a series of 10 articles on this with interviews. We have an historic 90-minute interview with Stanley A. Fulham. Basically, it appears as though there is a regional galactic governance authority composed of the Alpha Centaurians, the Pleiadians, the Sirians, even the Bootes Greys, and others who are concerned with matters in our immediate region of the galaxy. They may even have been responsible for seeding Homo sapiens, which we were members of, as a 12-strand DNA race.
Yes.
We're intended to be light beings. And it was the Anunnaki extraterrestrials, who incidentally are based on the planet X, which is due back in 3600 BC, who disconnected 10 of our DNA strands in order to enslave us from a consciousness point of view and thwart this starseed experiment. Well, the Regional Galactic Governance Council spent 10 years communicating to Stanley Fulham, and also they have communicated to a former NATO Spanish intelligence agent. So we have two different points of comparison, and both are congruent. And what they say is that they made a decision to intervene in the affairs of this planet and to clean up the environment, because the environment was on the state of collapse, so that Homo sapiens would not go extinct.
I have read this thing about intervention in other sources like Salusa and Sheldon Idle, but continue, go ahead.
Yeah, well, you see, the difference of the work that we do vis-a-vis Sheldon Idle and Salusa is that that's channeled material which does not have evidentiary backup. You see, there's no way of verifying that in the 3D context. But what we do is we go and we verify from a 3D context. And here, there was a prediction of an October 13th event, and that occurred. Then to the Spanish NATO intelligence officer, they said, on November 24th, we're going to overfly New York, and that occurred. And then in Stanley Fulham's last statement, they said, we're going to overfly Moscow, Russia, and London, England in January of 2011, and that occurred. And if you go to all of our articles, we have meticulous studies there with multiple videos, up to 20 videos per study, that show that all of these things did occur. And then we show all of the connections that tend to support the fact that there is a Regional Galactic Governance Council, that they are the ethical extraterrestrials, so that there is a thing here. I see we've reached the end of our audience, of our time. Well, thank you so much.
Alfred, it was so fascinating what you're telling, and I want to thank you very much. And I just want to hear one last question from you, and it's about disclosure, about the mainstream media will reveal all this information that you have researched. You have done a great job in your lifetime, but how soon do you think that this information will become public knowledge worldwide?
Well, I consider my columns to be the mainstream media. I mean, they're carried by Google News, and on a good month, I have 400,000 readers. So we are starting to become the mainstream media.
That's amazing. That's such good news. I didn't know that the internet websites like Nibiru...
No, I didn't know that there were so many features. Yeah, I write for Examiner.com, which is a mainstream newspaper.
Yes.
You see? So my articles are on Examiner.com, and those have 400,000 readers a month. So it is read by the mainstream.
Wonderful news, and wonderful that you are doing this work, and I hope you can continue for a long time.
Thank you.
I think we have 1 minute and one last question, because it was so interesting to hear what you were saying about Mars and about time travel. But I would just want to know, what do you think about ascension?
Well, yes. Ascension is a word. It's a technical word. It's a term of art. And people have used other words to describe the shift in vibrational frequencies that are occurring. And yes, that is very much congruent with the research of Dr. Carl Johan Kalman on the Mayan calendar, for example.
I know it's research, yes.
Yeah. So that shows that now the portal actually now in, at this time, as of March 9th, 2011, the portal at the center of our universe, the interdimensional portal, is sending out frequencies of unity consciousness. So that is why we have a positive future ahead of us and not a catastrophic future. So ascension is one way of stating it. I prefer to state it in many more scientific terms, you know, that are more related to energy, frequency, and vibration, because I think that that gets out of the area of belief and into the area of knowledge. And that and that is one of the hallmarks of our time, is that science and spirituality are coming together.
Exactly. I just wanted to say this. You're reading my thoughts, but you... Alfred, what you are doing is that I've been more in the spiritual area of extraterrestrials, reading Sheldon Neidl and Salusa, but the messages that they send out are congruent with the research that you are doing, and you bring together this ascension spirituality with rocket science, and this is just wonderful.
Very, very good. Very good. Yeah. I'm very happy to have met you and that you have provided this opportunity for us to have this dialogue.
Yes, and Alfred, I must say, for me, my goal is to interview people like you to get the news out to the world, to the listeners, and I want to thank you for being here. And I hope to have you back maybe in a few months. We'll see. But it was wonderful to have you. Thank you, Alfred.
Thank you.
And all the best.